Because Jellicles can, and Jellicles do. Jellicles do, and Jellicles can. Jellicles can, and Jellicles do. Jellicles do, and Jellicles can.
Jellicles can, and Jellicles do.
I can't do this. I can't do it.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Lindsay Loveridge, welcome back from the holidays.
Hey, I'm here.
Did you have a good Christmas?
Yeah, actually, I had a really nice Christmas.
Yeah, me
holidays
too.
Holidays overall were pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Didn't do much for New Year's, but still had a nice, you know, and in those days, it's just like nice to have like time off.
I kept it really low key. I went to got some Korean barbecue on New Year's Eve and then home, had a glass of champagne in my house and called it good.
And went to bed.
at a reasonable time. I was exhausted by midnight because I am an old. So
you're not old. Don't say that to someone who's like 7 years older than you. Yeah, no, I didn't do Jack shit on New Year's. Mostly just hung out around the house and like cleaned and helped somebody move. And yeah, it was, well, I suppose I did that. Anyway, the thing I did do on Christmas though, was see a little film called Cats.
Did you?
I did.
and was it then, a, ho- and was it then, a holiday extravaganza?
And then I committed a war crime when I said like, hey, Lindsay, go see Cats. So we can talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah. Just the act of seeing Cats was an experience in and of itself, like driving to the theater, telling another human being I want a ticket for it, while when everyone knows exactly what I'm getting into. I gave the ticket to the usher and she's like, seeing Cats? I'm like, yeah, I'm seeing Cats. And she goes, it's okay. It's okay.
Like, like a therapist. Like,
yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. I'm not judging you. It's okay that you're seeing Cats.
Was there anyone else in the theater?
No, I was the only person there. Like, it was sad because I went to the concessions, you know, get my popcorn, and I got some Airhead candy and a water, and you know, they have the assigned seats. So it's like, you know, pick your seats. And the guy told me, as you can see, pretty much everything's available. I'm just like, I hate everything right now. I'll take E6. And there was supposed to be one other person in theater, and I guess they just didn't show up. So it was just me sitting alone and Cats on a Monday night.
Completely alone. Wow.
Completely alone.
They were like, do we turn the movie on? Yeah, well, that lady seems to want to see it.
Right.
That is hilarious. I saw it at the theater that I went to was Universal City Walk, which is right next to Universal Studios Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And it was about, and this was Christmas Day, which is usually in the evening, which is usually a pretty packed day at the movies because movie theaters are open on Christmas Day. And a lot of people do that in the evening as a ritual. And it was like, maybe 2/3 full. But before we get into the film itself, I wanted to know if you had personal history with Andrew Lloyd Webber and or musicals.
I mean, probably not as much as you, but I have seen Phantom of the Opera on stage in Portland, and I have seen the film adaptation of Phantom of the Opera starring Gerard Butler.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think, that's probably it. I've seen Starlight Express in London about 20 years ago. That's my history with Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Well, he did, he was Les Miserables too, right?
Yeah, I've actually never seen that.
Oh, I see. You should watch that one. It's good. Okay. I would say personally, like, of course, I've seen most of his work and he's not, like, I'm more of an Ashman and Menken guy. Like, I'm more of a Little Shop of Horrors, Aladdin type of guy than I am sung through stuff. But I do really love Phantom and Les Mis. And I had never seen Cats until this movie was coming out, and I bought a DVD of the Broadway production.
Okay.
And saw it for the first time and fucking hated it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, I hated it. I thought it was like, oh, this is cocaine and Quaaludes. This is just cocaine and Quaaludes.
Okay.
That's what this shit is. And it's, you know, like, I did not like it at all. The staging was fine. You know, it had some interesting ideas in it and everything. It wasn't like the worst musical I've ever seen. But, like, I don't really like musicals where they never stop singing.
Okay, like, right.
I want, like, bangers. Like, because in a musical like that, you don't get, like, bangers. You get one long song that's, mm-hmm. like, 2 hours long. It's, like, yeah. 2 hours long. They kind of changed that up a little bit for the movie version of Cats. In fact, they scrambled around a lot of it. For the movie version. But I wouldn't say I dislike Andrew Lloyd Webber. It's just not my favorite.
I'm surprised about how much it didn't have a plot.
Well, we'll get to that. So
okay.
So wouldn't it be cruel if I said, like, Lindsay, summarize Cats? That would be the meanest.
You're gonna do it, right?
The meanest possible
intro to you doing
thing.
That.
It's so mean. Anyway, Lindsay, could you tell me what Cats is
about? Yeah, I can tell you what Cats is about. Unfortunately, so Cats is about the film. Anyway, it's about cats. They live in London.
You're like the end.
The end. All right, they live in London. These particular cats are. I mean, they're pets, and some of them are street cats, but they're all Jellicle cats. And we're introduced to the world of...
They're not all Jellicle cats.
All the ones in the play that we meet are Jellicle cats. Not all cats are Jellicle cats, but all the cats that we're going to focus on in the play are Jellicle cats. Don't ask me to tell you what a Jellicle cat is. They have a whole song about it, and it tells you nothing. So, not even going to try... Okay, as far as I can figure out, they're all descended from Judi Dench. And
I mean, I can tell you, like, okay, so it's a metaphor for aging Broadway stars. That's what it is.
Is it really?
Yes.
I guess that makes sense when you look at...
Yeah, because, you've aged out of the profession, and so you write your name in the stars is basically the plot of Cats.
Right.
It's just cocaine and Quaaludes made it into... But what if they were cats?
What if they were cats? I didn't even really pick up on that so much.
Yeah, well, the movie's
but can you
horrible.
Blame me?
No. Like,
can
no.
you? No, you can't.
God,
so, okay,
I hate this musical so much. Anyway, go on.
So it's told, the movie's told mostly through the perspective of Victoria, who's a newly abandoned cat. She's, from what I can tell, actually supposed to be like a kitten. Like, she's not a fully... grown cat, and she's abandoned, and she meets the Jellicle cats, and they're gonna have a ceremony called the Jellicle Ball, where all the cats put on their best performance because these cats have abilities other than just being cats, and the one that is the best gets to be reborn by going to the heavy side layer.
Right. See, you see where I'm going with the metaphor?
Yeah. I get your metaphor, but it's also just a fucking show about cats. God damn it.
Yeah.
So, most of the play is just being introduced to each individual character, and then a couple of performances to earn their way into the Heaviside Lair, and also Idris Elba as McClavity, who's, you know, the bad cat, the Moriarty cat.
Oh, and then Taylor Swift, who each have maybe 10 minutes of screen time.
Yeah, Taylor Swift really just comes out of fucking nowhere, to be honest. Like, we kind of meet McClavity's other henchman on the boat as he's kidnapping the cats so that he has a better chance of winning the competition. And then Taylor Swift just, like, shows up. So, you know, but she's working with him. And they...
Well, no, that's an entire musical about how she fucked him. That's what that's about.
I'm not getting any of the metaphor in this movie that you picked up. So, you know, good on you for seeing underneath the furry layer and getting to the true meat of cats.
Well, I mean, it's so fucking abstract and has nothing to do with what it's like to have cats or own cats or be around cats.
Right.
Nothing to do with any of that. So this is abstract surrealism, basically, which normally I like. But,
same.
Not in this form.
No.
Yeah, no. Anyway.
So they kidnap old Deuteronomy, who's the mother God. Cat. Although usually old Deuteronomy is male in the play, but Judi Dench is old Deuteronomy this time. They McLaverty has magical powers. Inexplicably.
Like literal magical powers.
Literal magical powers can disappear, reappear, you know, and is doing this to the cats when he's kidnapping them. He's just like whooshing them out of existence. And so he does that to old Deuteronomy, but fortunately they have a magician cat on their side called Mr. Mephistopheles.
Yep.
And he believes in himself enough, and they all believe in him enough that he's able to just magic old Deuteronomy back, and they go back to what they were doing before, like no big deal, whatever. And then Jennifer Hudson gets her big moment, and she's picked, and she goes off into the sky, and that's the movie.
Yep, sure was. How did you feel about Rebel Wilson zipping off her own skin and then eating humanoid cockroaches alive?
I had a visceral reaction to that I wasn't expecting. I'm just eating those cockroaches. I had a pretty negative bodily reaction to just the mice, even.
The mice were so nightmare. It was a nightmare. Honestly, like, there was a quiet moment in that movie. And I said I whispered out loud to the person I was seeing it with, I wish I was dead. And the people around me laughed. I got a good laugh out of that one. So, like, holy shit.
I want to know how both Rebel Wilson and James Corden took those parts and are able to, like, have self-respect.
I mean, I don't know. Like, Tom Hooper, who's a bad director, who directed the also really bad theatrical adaptation of Les Mis not too long ago, where literally the entire movie's in close-up, and it features Russell Crowe. Singing like like he's horrible in that movie. He directed this, and so okay. Did you see the pre-patched or the post-patch? Because I saw the pre-patch.
I'm pretty sure mine was post-patch, just based on the fact that I saw it after the patch was supposed to have come out, and I wasn't distracted by their hands. And everyone says that was one of the big things in the pre-patch.
Did you see Judi Dench's wedding ring?
I wasn't looking for it, so I don't think so.
Okay, so in the version that I saw, sometimes they have human hands. Sometimes they have hands that are, like, finished. So they have, like, fur, and, mm-hmm. you know, their patterns cover their hands.
Right.
Sometimes they have feline paws on their feet. Sometimes they don't.
Sometimes they wear Reebok high tops.
Sometimes.
No reason at all.
Like, it was nightmarish. I was kind of stoned when I saw this. Not stoned enough, though. Like, not stoned enough for this.
I was completely sober.
Good for you.
Had to drive myself home, so
I didn't know. Yeah, no, I took a ride service. Yeah. I was like, look, if I'm going to put myself through this, because I already, you know, and admittedly, I already didn't like the musical. Like, I already didn't like Cats.
Yeah.
And, you know, and speaking as somebody who is a huge fan of musicals, that's a, you know, normally it's like, oh, they're singing. Great. Like, that's fun. This was like, the soundtrack to me had absolutely no bangers on it. Like, there's no good, catchy or memorable songs. Like,
there's like arguably two good ballads maybe, but there's no
like
bangers in there.
Now, you know, my homegirl Taylor Swift contributed an original song to this. That one was okay, I thought, but it didn't really make that much of an impact, and it was kind of weak. Like, it's all right, you know, I wouldn't, but it was at least kind of memorable. I don't know, man. It's a hilarious, like, to me, a hilarious disaster. Like,
right.
Which, you know, of course, the internet's picked up on that and everything, and that's everywhere. But, like, I suppose the nicest thing I could say about it is that I'll never forget it.
Right. Right. So I came out of it and I was like, man, this was whatever the hell this was. I'm like glad it exists on some level because it's so bonkers.
Yeah.
So weird. like, even if it's awful, it's kind of almost impressive in how, like, not typical movie fare we get. So I'm like, I'm glad this weird bad thing exists, just because it's weird and bad, and that breaks up the monotony.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Eases, dulls the pain a little bit. Like, but I would never, like, and here's the thing, though. Like, gun to my head, which one would you rather sit through again? Cats or Rise of Skywalker?
Cats.
I would take Cats. Yeah, you, right? See how fast you answered that? I would take that immediately. Instantaneously. Like,
yeah.
Because at least it's an interesting bad. Like, at least it's like,
I was never waiting for it to end, really.
Oh, no, yeah, you're never bored. That is one thing in its favor. You're never bored, but you are waiting for the next horrifying nightmare image.
Yes.
Like, that's, that scene with, like, Ian McKellen trying to pull that big plastic, like, that comedy.
Ian McKellen is, like, the best part, because he has just, like, fully embraced his catness or something in this, so he's, like, making dumb weird faces the whole time.
Yeah,
like,
but there's,
grimacing,
like,
grimacing in this awkward old man way, like, he tasted something bad. He's just, like,
yeah, and they scrambled around the story of the musical a bit so they could add in, like, a comedy fight.
Yeah.
At the end of a Disney movie, you know, where, like, every comic relief character gets to have their moment fighting in a comical way. They, like, added that into this.
Yeah.
Just like, what the fuck are you
saying? Like, I guess we haven't had any action in this movie yet, so let's have him fight another cat guy on a boat.
Yeah, Jesus.
They'll have him walk the plank. It'll be great. And it'll tie into Gus's, you know, whole bit about how he played a pirate or something in a play once.
I think you're right. It's like, it's better to walk out of something going, you know, saying to yourself, like, well, that was memorable.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to stop thinking about that for a little while.
Right.
As opposed to just walking out of something and going, that was fine. And then getting in the car and getting some takeout and going home. Like, that's, and you just don't even, there's not even anything to say about it. That it is better, which is maybe a sad state to be in, but I don't know. Do not watch the movie Cats, in my opinion.
I'm going to have nightmares about the railway cat. That was the one that, like, put it over for me. It was the cat in the trousers with the suspenders and, like, the long mustache and the tap dancing.
Sure.
Everything about him was scary to me. I don't know.
Also, the scale was constantly changing.
I was distracted by that the whole time. I was like,
how big are they supposed to be?
Are they the size of mice? How small are the mice? Because, you know, they'd be, like, sitting on a stair, and they wouldn't take up much space on, like, a stair on a staircase. Or there were other things, like, when they held, when Victoria is, like, holding the silverware and stuff, and it's much, much bigger than her. And I'm like, I have a cat, and it sits at my dinner table sometimes, and I feel like it could still arguably use human-sized silverware. But, you know, maybe I'm thinking about this too much.
No, I don't think you are. It's extremely distracting.
Right.
It's extremely distracting. In one scene, they're the size of, like, kittens. In the next scene, they're the size of mice. In the next scene, they're the size of people. In the next scene, they're, like, it's really,
like, this is not the size of, like, a cat on its hindquarters. Like, if you just took a cat and put it on two legs, like, they are definitely smaller than that most of the time.
Yeah,
I think,
you know, and, like, the director is out there, has been out there in the press basically saying, we didn't have enough time to finish this. We had a release date, not take enough time to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
I would believe that. However, there is nothing that could completely fix what is wrong with this movie. Like,
right. You
couldn't really fix it. And, you know, that's coming from somebody who didn't particular, you know, who doesn't like the original at all. So my opinion can be discounted on that front. But I don't know, man. Just why didn't you just make it an animated movie? I don't know why you didn't just do that. Like,
I was having a similar discussion where I was trying to figure out why they went with CG over, say, like, costumes and stuff. But then I remembered Jim Carrey and the Grinch and how much time it took to turn him into the Grinch for that movie. And imagine doing that to, like, a whole cast. Like,
just make it animated.
Yeah.
Just make it animated. I didn't understand why they didn't just do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's enough about that. Lindsay, what's in the news?
Okay, we've got some interesting stuff this week. First thing, this came out right before New Year's, but we hadn't got a chance to talk about it, was Hideaki Anno just out and out throwing Gainax under the bus. Deservedly throwing Gainax under the bus. So I think we talked about on one of the podcasts earlier that one of the representatives of the company was arrested for indecent acts, I think is what it was.
Right.
And the press in Japan had been covering that as like Evangelion Studio, blah, blah, blah. And it really upset Anno and all the folks over at Kara because they're not Gainax anymore. And they thought that was, you know, going to look poorly on them or reflect poorly on them. So Anno decided to just lay it all out there in a business magazine called Diamond. And he kind of talks about how Gainax has been doing some pretty shoddy business practices for a while, setting up shell companies and things like that. Setting up shell companies and things like that. So, you know, kind of just setting the record straight about how everything got to this point. And it also kind of shines some light on how we ended up with those FLCL sequels.
Right. Yeah. No, it was a pretty fascinating interview. And Anno, you know, he doesn't really hold back. But it's in my estimation, Gainax is largely known for being pretty fucking shady. And yeah, they are. And but they gave birth. I wouldn't say birth, but I did say birth to, you know, one extremely talented artist who is Anno, who went on to do his own thing. To me, it's not surprising, but it is fascinating. So I would definitely check that out if you're interested in the history of those companies and everything like that. It is kind of crappy that people will still call Gainax the Evangelion Studio, even though Anno, like, started a completely new studio and remade the whole thing that does not have Gainax's name anywhere on it.
Yeah.
So it's like, yo, stop crediting them with this. Like, that is their most famous work, but you could at least put like Nadia or something on there, you know, something else. Something not so disrespectful to the person who actually created Evangelion.
No. Like they were just eating up his goodwill, I guess is what you could say. Like, 'cause he had gone to college with one of the guys that was still there, and, you know, he put his name down on paperwork for them. He was pretty lenient with them about getting royalties for the merchandising and stuff like that. He gave them a loan to try and help them out, and you know, never saw any of that money back, didn't get any sort of real respect from them for it. So I'm glad he finally got the rights to Ava's merchandising and other stuff back from them eventually. I think that was what he ended up.
Yeah. And he had to fight for that. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, they ended up having to sue them.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, anyway, what else is out there?
Let's see. I don't know if you've got personal experience with this franchise, but Higurashi When They Cry is going to get a new anime adaptation. And
okay.
I was pretty into this show when it came out initially.
So I have to admit, I am kind of looking forward to this because the original show is so potato looking. Like,
right.
It's so old DigiPaint bullshit that
we
tried to do a series review and I just couldn't get through it. I was just like, man, this is so slow and so
fugly.
And fugly. You know, that's the thing, the original games are pretty goddamn fugly too. Like, they're notorious.
One of the selling points on the games was always supposed to be that it was a sound novel over a visual novel, which I guess is their way of saying, like, yeah, this looks amateur, but the sound is really good.
Yeah, would have worked better as just a novel, guys. Anyway, I'll watch it. Like, you know, which at long last, maybe we'll do a series review of Higurashi, but this is probably my only chance because the original I just bounce off of it every time. So I'm hoping the storytelling is kind of sped up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's got, it was one of the first shows I remember watching that was kind of meta in that it presents the same story multiple times with different endings, just like you'd expect from a visual novel. And then about midway through, it's like, JK, this multiple ending thing is actually part of the narrative, and like one of the characters is aware of it, of shit repeating over and over again, which was interesting at the time. And also, you know, it had weird supernatural death stuff, and which is my jam.
Sure.
But yeah, it was really interesting because it kind of introduced like a new way to approach like adapting visual novels, and it worked that angle into it pretty seamlessly. But yeah, it kind of looks like Potato now, although the opening song I still think is really good from the first season.
Yeah.
Like I can hear it in my head now whenever I try to think of it.
Yeah, I'm hoping they sort of modernize it to the point where I can tolerate it.
Right. Yeah. Like shorten the arcs and, you know, maybe...
Tighten it up a little bit. Yeah. Looking forward to that. Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah. Hatsune Miku is coming to Coachella.
Okay. Just like Tupac, huh?
Yeah.
No, it's the same.
Exactly. Tupac.
It is exactly the same technology.
The ex-Japan guys, they had them show up too, which felt really fucking weird. I guess put it on the air now so it can live on forever. If I die and am famous in some way before that, no one is allowed to recreate me in 3D and put me on a stage like that. I think it's fucking weird.
Oh, well, yeah. No, I mean, you'd be dead, so you won't care.
I know, but I still think it's really, really weird.
Your problems are over.
just don't reanimate my corpse.
Oh, they're not doing that. It's a cartoon. Yeah, no, I find that funny. I am sure all of the millennials wearing inappropriate Native American headdresses who have been on Molly for 2.5 days will really enjoy Hatsune Miku's appearance. Yeah. I'm sure they'll love it.
And Kyari Pamyu is going to be there too.
So. Oh, yeah. You know, we saw her live at Anime Expo.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was a show. So I'm sure it was all right. I think we actually left during that performance.
We're old.
Well, we were just like, anyway.
we had to watch a couple acts beforehand. I was like, wait, I just want to see what she's wearing. I just want to see what she's wearing.
Yeah, okay. And, you know, good performer and everything like that. But I don't know. I suppose I just wasn't feeling it. And I was like, eh, anyway.
Yeah, I can bob my head to an MP3 in my room. It's fine.
I don't know. Like, she doesn't. Well, okay. So I like pop music. But Kari Pamyu, like, I don't know, I've never really loved most of her singles. I think her visual art is a lot stronger than her songwriting and, like, composition.
Okay.
So visually, I think she does some really interesting things. Songwriting-wise, it's like, this kind of sounds like noise to me. You know, and I prefer something that's a little bit more poppy, a little bit more catchy. You know what I mean?
I can see her aesthetic doing well at Coachella, though.
Like, oh, totes. Yeah, no, she's going to do great at Coachella. I'm sure she'll kill it. That is a dream destination for a lot of artists. So, that's... That, once again, enjoy your Molly, children.
I just can't get behind, like...
Coachella's miserable. I've been once. It's totally.
Yeah, I was gonna ask because isn't it just really, really fucking hot?
It's really fucking hot. You're outside all day. They have tents, but sometimes they don't. The tents are not air conditioned. Actually, a lot of times the tents are not air conditioned, and there are 4 billion people there who are all taking Instagram selfies constantly. It is the most annoying music festival I have ever been to. And that was like, I went like 7 or 8 years ago. So this has been a while now.
Yeah.
I'll never go back. I prefer like smaller venues, smaller festivals, like where you're not going to get 40,000 people, even more than that. It's like 50, something like that. Just with their phones out constantly. So like you can't really even enjoy the show and you can't really even get close to the stage because there's just so many goddamn people.
Yeah.
Anyway. I'm old.
Okay. I've walked out of a concert before because the person in front of me just felt the need to record the whole thing and I couldn't see shit.
That what like, who are you gonna upload it or something? Like who are yeah, you showing and, I mean, it it's, to?
Okay, and the concert, like, admittedly, was Trans-Siberian Orchestra. So, you know, not like the hippest shit, really.
But you went to see the Trans-Siberian Orchestra live?
Yeah, I went to see Trans-Siberian.
Wait a minute, how are you even older than I am?
They say I have an old soul.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah right.
Trans-Siberian.
So, I mean, I stayed until my head hurt and I couldn't see the stage half the time anyway because of the person directly in front of me. I was like, this is a seated concert, you asshole. Like,
yeah, I don't get that. It's like when you go on like a ride at Disneyland and the person in front of you, like more than one person in front of you has their phone up videotaping the whole thing. Like,
well,
no,
I told you, like a dude was doing that on the ride that I went on at the Animal Kingdom, right? And it was the water one. It was one of the water rides, like
yeah, right, the Avatar one, right?
No, it wasn't the Avatar one. It was the other one.
Well, anyway.
But it doesn't matter. The point is that he was, like, FaceTiming someone through the whole ride.
Well, yeah, I don't understand it. Like, you can go on YouTube and see videos of this that are, you know, shot by people who are amateur professionals. Like, mm-hmm. And the videos look fine. You're not, like, documenting this. Like, you could just take a selfie somewhere and people will know you went. You don't have to be like
make a documentary of themselves on all the rides.
You're not like reporting the news.
Right.
So you could put your fucking phone away and just enjoy it like with your eyeballs.
Yeah.
That would be a thing you could do.
Yeah.
I understand photos. I don't understand the person who like watches the concert they paid to see through the camera on their phone.
Right.
That I don't get.
The sound quality is going to be shit.
Yeah, it's going to... What are you doing? It's like posting it to your Facebook, like, hey, here's a 2.5-hour Trans-Siberian Orchestra concert. It's basically my bootleg tape of this concert. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Well, anyway. Anything else?
So the only other thing that struck me as newsworthy is that Cloudflare, an internet security service, is being sued in Tokyo court for protecting manga piracy sites. And this seems to be happening more and more, not suing Cloudflare in particular, but really going after these piracy sites. I mean, we saw some pretty big ones get taken down last year. So this sort of just seems more, it's snowballing, I guess, which, you know, good for them. Because you can get all of your manga for free now, pretty much through the Shonen Jump and Manga Plus app. So, what are you doing otherwise? Like,
yeah, it's going through. I'm kind of glad that they're finally taking it seriously because for a long time you would go on like the iTunes Store,
mm-hmm.
I suppose it's the Apple App Store and type in manga and the first thing that would pop up would be like two or three pirate services,
right?
And then you would get the legit guys.
Yeah,
that sucks. And a lot of that,
it still happens in Google sometimes when I'm looking up for an article or whatever, and I'll put in the name of a manga or even an anime, and like the official licensor will be like third, fourth, or fifth in the Google search results, and the stuff on top of it is
It's all piracy stuff. And if you dare click on one of those pirate links, you get 50,000 pop-up ads and viruses and shit. Like, it's horrible. It's awful. So, like, I'm glad they're finally really cracking the whip on that stuff. Because,
right.
And not just because, like, the only people who should profit from this are giant media conglomerates, but those pirate sites are shitty and not, they don't deserve to profit from this stuff. And what you're doing when you click on that stuff is helping them profit from it. None of that money goes to anyone who worked on the original. They're just stealing content. And that fucking sucks. So, you know,
I think people tend to forget
take
that
it
a
down.
Lot of,
and it's also, to, Like, you can get access to almost the entire Shonen Jump library for what, like $5 a month or something like that. Like, it's really
less.
It's less. It's like $2 or $3. Yeah, it's like $2 or $3. Come on now, come on. How cheap do you really need to be? Like, or is it just like some kind of bullshit political crusade that you're waging, where it's like, I should be free to shut up, just pay the $3 to the artist who fucking made it. Good Lord. Get over yourself.
I feel like, too, that people tend to forget that a lot of anime fans, especially when they're new coming in, like, they're young kids, too. So they're going to probably click on whichever looks like it might be the legitimate name of a service that comes up in a search result. Like, I don't expect to, like, go into a junior high and talk to My Hero Academia fan and for them to necessarily know which company has licensed this show. You know, it's just, like, so I think having those sites disappear so that the awareness is brought to the legitimate sites that offer it is important, especially when you have young fans who are just like Googling shit because they want to know more about it or read it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, it's well within their rights to put a stop to that. And honestly, I do think that the manga industry has largely risen to the occasion and tried to replace something that was stealing from them with a service that would not only meet the needs of their customers, but also be relatively, well, not even relatively, like extremely inexpensive. Shonen Jump is not, it's not expensive. And if you're like, well, some people don't have $3, you're just justifying piracy, buddy. Most people have
$3. I would say, like, the only hurdle being, you got to explain to your parents what this is and why they should give them their credit card information.
Yeah, sure. All right.
But if you're an adult with a part-time job, you can probably afford this. You can probably afford it with your allowance. So, I mean,
I don't know that many like 10-year-olds who are on Twitter angrily arguing over and over and over again that everything needs to be free or don't blame me for pirating things. Like, you know, I feel like you can kind of tell when someone's like a 10-year-old. Like, the arguments are phrased in a way where it's like, are you in your 20s?
Are you allowed to be on the internet? I don't think it's illegal for you to be here. You need to stop. Go do your homework. Yeah,
all right.
That's pretty much it for the news.
Okay, well, so we have two anime to talk about this week. We'll have more to talk about next week because it is preview guide time right now, which means it's show after show after show after show after show. But I did really want to talk about one of the early premieres that really struck me, which is a show by a man named, you may know, as Masaki Yuasa.
He's one of my favorites right now.
Who directed a show called Devilman Crybaby and a show called Tatami Galaxy and a movie called Lou Under the... What is that movie called?
Lou Over the Wall?
Lou Over the Wall? Is that what...
Yeah, I think so.
All right. This is a really direct reference to Ponyo Over the Cliff. Anyway, so he has a show out called... he and Science Saru, which is his studio, has a show out called Keep Your Hands Off Aizouken, which the minute I heard the premise, I was like, yep, I gotta watch that. And I absolutely fell in love. Like, just totally loved it. So, this is a show about a high schooler named Midori, who is really obsessed with, like, concept art and, you know, sketching in her journals and everything, and joins an anime club in high school. And there she meets Kanemori, who is sort of a, let's say, cynical, kind of a half-lid kind of a person. And then they meet Tsubame, who is a famous model. The famous model turns out to also want to create anime, but she's a character designer. So her and Midori come together, and they start creating together. And, like, there's a sequence in this where... And it's not even the sequence at the end. The one that really got my attention was when they're drawing together at the table.
Yeah.
And they're just bouncing ideas off of each other and complimenting each other's art and working together.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, and the other character, Kanemori, is more like, oh, well, I think there might be money in this, which is, this is all a metaphor for the act of creating art in this day and age. Like, yeah, that is what this is. But I felt like it also captured perfectly, perfectly the joy of creation. When you're an unbridled creative who is working with somebody who just fucking jams with you, like you jive together, you're like, oh, let's do this. No, let's do this. Yeah, let's do this. Yeah, let's do this. Yeah, let's do this. And you're just bouncing. This captures that so well. Like, there's so much, and there's not that much anime, but there's a lot of anime that is about anime. So you could point to like Shirobako as an example of like, well, this is like about process.
Right.
This is about creativity.
Yeah.
Like unbridled creativity. And like the feeling that you get, like this is about the emotional process of creating anime, which is very different from the business side of it. They have a character in there that represents the business interests, and a lot of people do like that character, but
it's just got good faces. It's
yeah,
really what it
good faces. You know, yeah. Well, of course, you know, it's Yuasa. Like, you either like his art style or you don't. But I thought it was perfect, and it was like, wait, did you already make the best fucking show of the year?
It's one of the first things to premiere, and it's already.
But that happened, like, Devil May Cry Baby premiered in January 2018.
We're like, well, year's
yeah,
done.
I was like, oh, well, all right, give all the awards to this one.
Right. Yeah, this show is like magic, is what it was, when watching them interact with each other and the creative process of them. Tsubame shows one of her mechanical designs, which isn't something she really focuses on. And Midori is like, well, you know, what did you think it would do? And yeah, they sort of start building off, well, it would be for construction. Okay, well, how would it fly? Or how would you pilot it? And it, you know, goes into this whole sequence where they represent the creative process by showing them in the machine. And, oh, well, there would be a hatch here to escape out of. And, you know, yeah, liftoff would go this way and it would be steam powered. And it was just, it was really what it reminded me of. I think this is why it touched my heart. What it reminded me of is I had a friend in seventh grade who was artistically, you know, she liked to draw. And I've never been good at drawing, but I had ideas. I liked to write. And we did make one comic together. And so we did the whole conceptual process of that, designing the characters together, designing, you know, like magic items and stuff that they would use, naming them, doing page layout and everything like that. And I mean, it was fun. I showed it to my classmates and stuff. And
I have had that same, I've had that exact same experience, except like, my cousin and best friend in elementary school, we made a whole comic series together, and we printed it out and distributed it to the class. Like, we were unashamed. Look at our creative nonsense. But like as an adult though, like this is an expression, an articulation of the creative process that you go through with someone else that feels like freedom.
Yeah.
That you just don't really see this kind of thing expressed in this way very often at all. And even if the rest, I don't know, like, this is based on a manga, I don't know how the rest of it goes, so whatever. But that first episode really spoke to me and was really wonderful. So highly recommend people get out and see that one. Before we get to this week's series discussion, I did see Weathering With You, Makoto Shinkai's new one. Next week we'll be doing that show, so look forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing your take on it, especially because you haven't even seen Your Name.
No, and I'll
which is like, dude.
So when it comes to anime films, it's like a weird black hole. I don't get to them nearly as much as I do TV series. And then when it comes to live action, I'm pretty evenly distributed, I guess. Like, I watch live action TV and a lot of live action film, but for some reason, like, I don't see a lot of anime. I don't make the time for it. And so I haven't seen Your Name.
You will.
Yeah, I'll watch it before we record.
You're going to back-to-back them. It's going to be interesting.
Am I going to be like, well, here's the same movie again?
No.
Oh, well, that's good, probably, at least.
Yes, but also no.
I think I know what you're saying.
Well, anyway. Okay, so the show we watched for this week is called Stars Align, which just recently wrapped up. Lindsay, what is Stars Align about?
Well, first off, wrapped up is kind of, we're using that pretty loosely here.
Oh, right? Yeah. No. Well, okay. It stopped. It stopped.
Yeah, it stopped. There are no more episodes of it.
It didn't wrap up. It stopped. Anyway, yeah. What's it about?
Stars Align is about a bunch of troubled boys on a soft tennis team who try to get better at soft tennis, but all their parents suck.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Smash cut to credits. The end.
So it was an ambitious show. I'd say that came out, the director stated on social media after it ended that it was never intended to be this short. It was originally planned to be too poor. And then the production committee basically was like, no, we're not going to give you the money for all. And instead of rewriting the whole show and starting over from scratch, they just went forward with it as if it was still too poor in the hope that somehow they'll get to tell the second half of it. So,
well, we'll see. We'll see if they do. But what's it about?
I think it's about how parents can stifle their children or use their children as avatars for themselves. How finding yourself, your true self, is difficult under the expectations of authority figures in society, and how finding your tribe of people can make all the difference in that.
Sure, right. I would say more directly, it is about a boy named Maki, who has...
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, there's characters in the show, too.
You're correct, yeah. It's about a boy named Maki who has a deeply abusive, unemployed father, who winds up in a new school. He transfers to a new school. There he meets Toma, who is the captain of the tennis club, which is referred to in Japanese school terms as soft tennis. They suck. That tennis club is terrible. But he has really good reflexes. And Toma basically begs him to join, and he does. And they sort of form kind of a partnership. And then you learn about all the trauma that all of these people have been through. And my biggest... And then it just stops.
Yeah. There's maybe a murder, but we don't really know.
You don't really know.
I like to believe that it ends with a murder. That's where I'm at with it right now.
It's not really clear. So through the course of these 12 episodes, you learn more and more and more about these individual characters. Like, most of it is about the main two, Maki and Toma. But you do learn about the other characters, and it turns out they're all really traumatized. And maybe the boys' tennis club needs to also need, like, a team therapist or something. Yeah. But it's also quite, like, the show's, it's interesting. So, I don't know. Do you watch a lot of sports anime? You watch Haikyuu. I know you watch Haikyuu.
I watch Haikyuu.
And that's it?
That's pretty much it. I mean, I've watched the first season of Free. I've checked out a couple of others, but usually if they get into that sort of by the book sports show.
Yeah.
I kind of nope out because I don't play sports and I don't have an active interest in real sports, really. It has to have like something else for me sure. to like it.
Sure. Sports anime are never actually about sports. They're always about the characters who are on the team, because if you're not, like, if you're into sports, you're not necessarily all that interested in a fictional match. Like, where it's been pre-decided who is going to win this, you just don't quite know. Like, generally, it's not what people come to sports anime for. They come to it for character drama. This, I thought, was a very interesting take on that, where it is very much about traumatized kids who, like, in a deeper way than you see in most other sports anime. Mm-hmm. And I did appreciate that. I thought it was animated pretty well. You know, it is a shame that it doesn't end, but...
Yeah, there's just a lot of questions sort of left.
Yeah. But from a narrative perspective, it is doing things that, like, you know, you don't see very often. It did play to me a little bit like, okay, this is getting a little, like, crazy melodramatic, like
after school special.
After, exactly. Now that is the term. perfect. Very smart. After school special. Yes, that it does come away like that a little bit. So, you know, this did get a lot of praise and everything for being like progressive and talking about some queer issues and stuff like that, which it does. You know, it does it very well. I really appreciated the scene where the main character just tells somebody like, hey, just I don't care if you have a crush on him. Love who you love. Like, that's fine with me, but, you know, you should come be the manager of the team.
Right, right, yeah.
I don't give a shit. Come.
That's when he meets you. And I felt like you did use ARC, even though it also doesn't really resolve.
No, it doesn't. No.
It was almost one of the better ones, anyway, as far as, like, looking into it. And
yeah.
Because they're gender questioning at this point.
Yeah, they're definitely doing the gender question thing. And which is unique for an anime. Like, that's not something you see very often.
Yeah.
So that's great. It's just kind of shitty that it just stops at 12.
Yeah, I want to see you find happiness.
Yeah, well, literally any of them find happiness.
Happiness, right, yeah.
Like, they're all so fucked up, and right. They have such awful parents.
Well, and the thing that gets me with Maki, in particular, his deadbeat abusive dad is like, and this is true in real life, but hey, if the court system worked, he wouldn't be suffering the way he is. Like, his mom's filled out the paperwork for a restraining order, but because they're divorced and he gets to always know whatever their new address is because of custody of Maki or something like that, so he always knows wherever they are when they move, and then shows up to steal money and then, you know, smack his kid around. And it's like, what kind of fucking broken system is this? What the hell?
Yeah, and like, that's the kind of storyline where I wish they had more episodes to talk about that and elucidate that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Or elaborate on that a little bit more. Like, like that stuff is really kind of like, wow, what the fuck? Is this really how it works?
Yeah. And the last episode ends with Maki coming home and his mom's not there, and then getting really upset about it. They don't tell you why she's not there. I implied that she may have been in the hospital, like the dad showed up and beat her up instead or something, because his mother's friend is there. And then it just cuts to Maki going to a convenience store and buying a knife for 300 yen, and then Maki going to his dad's apartment. And then that's like the end of the show. So
yeah, the ending is
it's real dark. Like they win that match, they win that match that lets them keep their club, and then all the kids go home to find out that their parents still suck. And
so this is an original story, and that means that we'll never know how it ends unless they actually give it more episodes, but that completely depends on whether or not anyone watches it.
Right.
Admittedly, the show really did have a very melodramatic kind of soap opera tone to it. And I don't know how much people go for that these days.
Yeah.
It's not really about tennis. Of course it's not. So I don't know if they're ever going to make more, or if it was just too progressive for whoever was sitting on the production committee. It did have its problems, but largely, like, I would be very happy to see a season two of this one.
Yeah, I need to find out if there's murder. And also,
that's the only thing, huh?
I really just want to know if he stabbed his dad to death. I need to know. I'm wondering if they were, the director was hoping that leaving off in that cliffhanger might entice more people who also just gotta know if he did the murder, but I don't know if that's going to work out. The director has promised that the ending will come in some shape or another, but it might not necessarily be animated. It could be books or something. I don't know.
Maybe they'll do a manga or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to recommend it because it's like, well, this is quite compelling and interesting and very relatable in many ways, and also seems to be reflecting reality in a way that you don't see a lot of anime do. It's quite queer friendly, has good, you know, good progressive politics, but I don't know if I would recommend it because it stops.
Yeah.
And you don't get the full story. So
you don't get the murder.
Do you tell people like, oh, you better watch Stars Align? It's like, am I doing you a disservice by saying that? Because, like, I know full well that you will not be satisfied.
Right. Like, I mean, it's tons of threads just, like, dangling in the wind there.
Yeah, right? It's a lot of it. Like, a lot of it is just not... I was kind of surprised. I was like, Really? Okay. Well, anyway.
Here's hoping.
Okay, let's get some Twitter questions. You ready for some of these Twitter questions?
Yeah, I bet they're all really deep.
Oh, yeah. Certainly aren't any really annoying questions in here. Exidor asks... I'm joking, of course. Thank you very much for sending in your silly
questions. We love all of you.
Yeah. How many times have you seen Cats now, and why isn't there an anime of Starlight Express? I have seen Cats once. Once.
Unless you count that Broadway show, but...
Wait, I suppose that's twice.
Yeah, and I've seen it once.
I've seen the movie Cats once and the Broadway show Cats once.
Yeah.
And
I've seen the movie one.
Yeah, right. As for Starlight Express, which is a similar premise, except they're trains or something. I've never actually seen Starlight Express, but so I feel
I've
as
seen
though
it. I saw it when I was 13, and I couldn't tell you anything about it other than all the actors wear roller skates and they're trains.
And okay.
I think there's racing in it.
So in other words, cocaine and quaaludes.
Yeah.
Adam asks, which Stars Align character is the Jellicle choice?
God damn it. I read that when it got sent in, and I was like, first off, I'm not sacrificing any of these children. And then I was like, but to be the Jellicle choice, you have to like be a great performer, so that would exclude all of the adults.
Well, you also have to be older, so I suppose it would be what's-his-face's older brother, who's like the senpai to the tennis club.
That's a good pick, yeah.
Yeah, he would probably wind up being the Jellicle choice. God damn it.
That's so stupid.
Stupid fucking question. Well, not a stupid question, but it's a stupid fucking conversation. If you asked me like 10 years ago, like, hey, do you know that you'll be discussing what the Jellicle choice would be based on the musical Cats for a short-lived tennis anime? It would be like, sure.
I mean, we can start applying this question to like all anime. Like, which Dragon Ball character is the Jellicle choice? And it's still just as ridiculous. Also, Krillin, probably. I don't know.
A friend of the show and site, Rose, asks, what are your general feelings about Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals, and where does Cats rank among them? I am not reading the rest of this. Wait, what? Yes, I am. Would you agree that Jellicles can and Jellicles do? Which popular anime character most deserves? Which popular anime character most deserves to ascend to the heavy side layer?
This is the same question, now it's expanded to like all animedom.
Yeah, I would rank Phantom number one, Les Mis number two, and then like 50,000 Spaces, and then Cats. And I've never seen Starlight Express, so I couldn't comment on it.
The only one that I have that I like is Phantom. I haven't seen Les Mis, so I can't comment on that. And then Cats, and then trains.
All right, then.
Okay.
Golden Pelt asks, McCavity has broken... You guys are killing me. McCavity has broken every human law, so which anime has he pirated?
God damn it. Okay, so is this about McCavity, or which anime would Idris Elba watch? I'm trying to...
It's definitely...
McCavity pirates One Piece.
It's definitely Naruto.
Okay.
It's definitely Naruto. Grooven asks, who has the worst parents in Stars Align? Also, who is your favorite character? Well, that's a normal question. Okay, so obviously the main character has the worst dad.
Yeah.
He beats the shit out of him and steals money from his mom, who has a restraining order out on him. Like, right. I don't know how much worse you get than that.
Yeah, there's also the dad that throws his son down the stairs because he doesn't play soccer, which is just...
There's that, you know. Too. Man, it's a lot of bad... Man, there's bad parents. Yeah. I suppose that's what it's mostly about, though.
Right, it's mostly about bad parents. But, you know, probably a toss-up between those two, Maki's dad and then the kid's dad, who's mad that his son quit playing soccer in elementary school. I'm like, where the fuck are your priorities? You're mad that, like, an 8-year-old didn't want... anymore, and now you hate him? Like, what?
Yeah, well, you know, some people are bad parents.
You have two other kids who are older and they play soccer and you're just mad that the third one won't play soccer. It's fucking soccer.
Indeed, it is soccer, but that's a huge fucking deal to be a soccer star. If you're like, my kid's an athlete and I'm a rageaholic who has abuse problems and I really thought that my kid would want to go into soccer instead of tennis, you know, you can kind of see the brain worm like bullshit reasoning behind why he would be angry about it. Like, you can kind of figure that out, but yeah, it's
figuring it out means he's just a piece of shit.
No, he's a huge fucking piece of shit for hitting his kid. Like, don't fucking do that.
Or just even obsessing to that level about what you're
projecting yourself onto your kid that much and then abusing them because they're not living up to your own ideals is fucking horse shit.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Anyway, Groovin asks...
Oh, they wanted to know our favorite character, too?
Oh, yeah. I would say Toma. I like Toma.
Yeah, I liked... I think I liked you the best, really.
Yeah, no.
It's just sweet. Just like a sweet kid.
The kids are all right.
Yeah.
As they say. The kids are all right. Sewing Rose asks, who was your Jellicle choice? Which cat was your favorite? I liked Skimbleshanks.
You liked the railway cat?
I don't know who that is.
Oh, okay. Skimbleshanks is the railway cat.
Oh, I see.
That frightened me the most, so.
I enjoyed Taylor Swift, who was number one, Taylor Swift. And number two, literally that musical number was copying exact shots, moments, and expressions from when Nicole Kidman descends from the heavens in the opening of Moulin Rouge, which is one of my favorite musicals, and they were just copying that directly, and I was like, hey, remember a movie that I liked?
Do you think like Baz Luhrmann's mad? I'd be kind of mad.
It plays more like homage, but I wouldn't call it a ripoff. It's just that it was like, oh, I see what you're doing here. So, you know, anyway. Wait, do you have
a favorite cat?
Do you have an answer for
this? Yeah, I have a favorite cat. I liked the two twin calico ones.
Oh, sure.
The ones that like wrecked the house. I liked their little musical number. And then McClavity, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Whatever.
You either like Idris Elba.
Sure.
So, yeah. Which I think leads into one of our next questions.
Let's see. Andalusian Dog asks, will any enterprising directors use digital fur technology for good instead of evil and make anime cat boys real? Now, that would have been an interesting aesthetic choice that I think would have worked better than what they have, where they're not covered in fur and they're not nude. They're wearing costumes, but have like cat ears and tails.
Kind of like, the blue cats that are always in those that one guy's anime movie, like one about a train out here.
Are you talking about Night on the Galactic Railroad?
Yeah.
No, that's not what I mean. No? Like human faces, human torsos. You could probably get away with human, just cat ears and a tail. Like, okay, that's it. Okay. Otherwise, it's just a performer. Right. Which mirrors kind of the way the Broadway show looks, I think, in a way that would work cinematically.
You can still, you know, believe they're cats. You know that they're supposed to be cats.
Yeah, because they have the ears and the tail, and that's all you really kind of need.
Put them in little dapper outfits.
You could have costumed them up and everything and all that. Like, maybe that would have been a better aesthetic choice. I mean, fucking, in my opinion, literally anything would have been a better aesthetic choice than what they went with. But anyway, let's see. Kazlab208 says, have you ever tried, this is our last question, have you ever tried to learn Japanese? If yes, then how are you learning it? How far did you get? And do you remember any of it today? Have you ever?
I took Japanese in college.
Yeah, me too. How many years?
Yeah. Just like two.
So I took it for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was a super senior in college. I took it for 5 years. I still have all my textbooks. I still actually go through them every now and then. And I enrolled in a online learning thing, you know, a community college class that was just Japanese 101. Uh-huh. So I could relearn my kana and all that other stuff, like the basics.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to like get hardcore into it, but learning that is like a full-time job, and I have a full-time job.
Right.
So yeah. Yes. The answer, of course, is yes. And mostly like these days, I'm just proud of the fact that I can still read katakana and hiragana. I can still read those, and my pronunciation is not completely wrong all the time.
Yeah.
Like I can still pronounce things.
Yeah.
And I can get around Tokyo okay. So yeah. I'm proud of that, but like my strength was always listening comprehension. Mm-hmm. That was always what I was the strongest at.
Yeah.
And that's still like, I don't think I'll ever learn the kanji alphabet. I don't think I ever will. It's just too complex.
I can read katakana and hiragana. If you write stuff out in romaji, I can read it correctly. I know some kanji that I've just picked up from repetition, because it just shows up through work so often.
Yeah, sure. Right. Yeah. No, I have those like, too.
I know how to structure a sentence, you know, and things like that. But I would say that my general vocabulary is probably not great.
So, yeah. No. Yeah. No. I assume that basically, like if I get into a cab in Tokyo, mm-hmm. I can tell them where I need to go, and they will understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
In Japanese, like I, mm-hmm. I got to, you know, it's like "Donde estás biblioteca," you know, that level. Right. That you're basically speaking it as in a kindergarten level.
Yeah,
I have no pride at all in my Japanese speaking skills, but it is something that I work on and try when I have time. Anyway, okay, I think that actually about wraps us up. Well, Lindsay, you've made the. No, actually, I'm not. No, I can't say it again. Because I don't want to ever hear the word ever again.
Political choice.
No! No! Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Lindsay for stopping by, as always. Theme song is Bucharest by the band New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us ratings. We know, whatever. It helps the show. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll see you all next week.